In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Back we go out on the limb to further explore one of the most controversial subjects known to the human race. For years, a British author and public speaker presented to filled arenas and stadiums in the early 2000s, speaking about how non-humans, masquerading as humans, walk among us. The non-humans were described as reptilian. Counter-narratives then drove the topic into a mess of censorship and misinformation. Despite these years of suppressive attempts, the reptilians among us topic took hold within the collective consciousness and began to grow. As we now witness, this dominant cultural awareness of reptilian shapeshifters forces billion-dollar industries to take over the narrative in commercials and pop culture. This attempt to crystallize a rapidly evolving awareness may seem futile, while the reptilian overlord jokes are baked into the zeitgeist for now. Authors Stuart Swerdlow, David Icke, and Matthew Deleuze all claim similar experiences of an apparition appearing, who then communicates the implausible reality of how they've come to walk among us. With Swerdlow, the entity explained how their species created the reptilian race to antagonize and test humans. This is a shared sentiment throughout related literature. The Angel Gabriel character in the 2005 film Constantine said, quote, "It's only in the face of horror that you humans truly find your nobler selves," end quote. In Swerdlow's creation story outline in his book titled Blue Blood, True Blood, he points to the destruction of the reptilian colony of Lemuria by Atlanteans millions of years ago. Reptilian survivors retreated to Central and South America and Northern India, many inhabiting underground spaces. Humanoids from planets Mars and Maldek also had colonies on Earth. When the Atlantis colony was destroyed, the reptilians resurfaced. A UN-type council arranged for each colony on Earth to use its DNA to create human beings, male and female. In a subversive move, the reptilians, working with Syrian technology, wanted to openly rule humans in Sumeria, which is the Iraq and Iran region, and learn how to blend their DNA with humans and stabilize human form. In this realm of intuitive conjecture, this time was known to be the advent of the reptilian human shapeshifting. The reptilian creation stories are frozen in stone, concealed in allegory and stilted prose, as most internet users are served microsamples on social media about this vast ancient topic. Echoes from the mythos become the legacy of human spiritual battles against sinister forces who have combined their DNA with ours. The ancient union yields the shadow nature, a programmed predominant species forever at odds and easily manipulated, a societal hive designed to produce a human energy, the nectar of the gods. We explore further with returning guest Ken Inigan, who for years has continued to bring cutting-edge research to his YouTube subscribers. He's endured a lot of interference and attacks, yet stands amid a handful of consistent researchers into the cultural and coded historic aspects of The Biggest Secret. Ken Inigan, welcome back to Another News.
Thanks for the introduction there, Jeff.
Well, Ken Inigan, you were a guest on the show several years ago, and I've rebroadcast that interview that we did. If you would, however, please remind listeners of your background and areas of research.
Okay, I started researching reptilians probably going on about close to 20 years ago. I had a personal event in my life that got me involved with a very well-known secret society, not in a bad way. I was kind of involved with one of their family members, and I met a high-level Mason. They were trying to recruit me into their order, and a few years later, I'd worked for another business where I met a high-level member of the Knights of Columbus, and they were trying to recruit me because I had very high intelligence and very high IQ for esoteric topics. I also, around that time, is when I came into the research of Zachariah Sitchin and became aware of David Icke and who else you just mentioned, Stuart Swerdlow, as well as Jordan Maxwell. This was in the mid-2000s, probably right around the birth. Yeah, YouTube started around 2006, so that would have been around the early days of YouTube, where there was only really a handful of researchers doing anything, talking about any esoteric subjects, alien races, secret societies. But the information was very limited. It seemed very controlled. A lot of the things didn't add up. And then when I started looking and researching into occult topics, I noticed the underlying serpent and dragon symbolism everywhere. England, London, England would be a perfect example. They have dragon statues everywhere in England, and they're obviously associated with monarchy. So I started noticing all this quote-unquote serpent symbolism everywhere. So I started researching into the subjects as the Anunnaki. In the research I do, my belief is we have two different types of, I'll call them serpentine entities, because none of them are really related to any modern lizards. We have Alpha Draconians, who are otherwise most infamously known as the Anunnaki. They were the founders of Babylon and ancient Sumeria. They are the ones that supposedly were responsible for destroying Moldek. And then we have native Terran reptilians. I call them Terrans, but those are supposedly a serpentine race of reptilian hominoids that evolved alongside dinosaurs at the time that are indigenous to this planet. And they are not very friendly to humans or Alpha Draconians for obvious reasons. From what I know about the Atlanteans, I believe they were a refugee race that came to Moldek and tried to settle, which is why they were. The information I have off this comes from the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, which is supposedly a text written by Thoth, who was an Atlantean, not the Egyptian god. I believe Thoth was mocked with that god. This god, Thoth, was the Atlantean, who also claims he was the builder of the Great Pyramid of Giza and the other pyramid complexes around the world, that the Atlanteans, after the fall of Moldek, had fled the planet through a stargate, and Alpha Draconians from that time start Babylon, that would be the Ajiji god Marduk. They kind of curated human society starting in ancient Babylon, and then it kind of goes out from there. The information that we have on this, it's not easy to come by, so I've been doing this quite a few years, so these are different pieces of the puzzle I've been putting together over a long time. But what I found out about Alpha Draconians, for example, is they tend to look more like the Skeksis creatures that Jim Henson showed in The Dark Crystal. Now, I have original artwork made by an illustrator working with me. I'm currently working on a reptilian book, which should be published this year, hopefully, with all my research in it. And I have depictions of them drawn for me in my book for what I believe they actually look like. They are a parasitic creature. They're more avian and bird-like, which is why they use avian symbols as their logos, such as the Roman eagle, the American eagle, the Nazi eagle. The eagle is a symbol of the Alpha Draconians. They also use other symbols like the phoenix or the falcon in Saudi Arabia or the double phoenix. What is also interesting about the word eagle is when you break down the syllables of the word eagle, you have two of the Ajiji gods in there. You have Ea, who is also Enki, E-A. You have G, which the G is a common thing within the occult. You obviously, most famously, it's in the square and compass of the Freemason. It has a few different meanings. And then at the end of eagle, you have L-E, which is L backwards, who is actually Enlil, and he is also one of the Ajiji gods. So you have two of the Ajiji gods embedded into the English name eagle. And these entities were first discovered in Atlantis. It's where the root of my name comes from. My name, Kininigan, is actually supposedly an Atlantean word. These Alpha Draconians, when they infiltrated Atlantean, they're fourth dimensional and work through black magic. And the only way to have them come into these dimensions is through blood magic, meaning someone in ancient times, for whatever reason, performed probably a blood magic ritual. It would summon these entities, kill the caster, and use that caster's DNA to take their form, and hence their shape-shifting abilities. I do have a long theory on how they actually do this with some physics and science behind it. I'm not going to get too much into detail on that because we do have limited time, but there is like evocation rituals written in ancient Sumeria for the evocations of different gods. I actually have a Sumerian Grimoire on my computer that I use for reference. This is how they infiltrated Atlantis. And when they infiltrate, they infiltrated spiritual and political circles. They feed on negative energy. They're negative energy parasites. Hence why you have to do blood magic to actually summon them. That is the taking of another life, either human or animal, in a blood ritual to summon them. They're highly occultic. They are the forces behind what most people refer to as black magic. They do this with a demonic army they also control. Otherwise, they are called the Imkula, according to Sumerian teachings. But the Imkula, what I believe most commonly associated with, are little alien gray archons. And these alien grays are demonic. They take different forms when they're invoked in different rituals. But yeah, they are interdimensional. These are the demonic realms that they control. So going by their Alpha Draconian hierarchy, you have 12 Ajiji gods, one mother goddess, Mamu Tiamat, who in the Amana Elise says she bore them all, so it's kind of like a hive mind mentality. Then you have 300 Anunnaki that are created in ancient Sumeria by Marduk. And then from that, I think you get funneling down of different bloodlines. But the gods themselves tend to be immortal. Now, are they immortal, or does time pass differently in the fourth dimension where they exist? That's another physics question right there I really can't answer. But some of these gods, we have like the Sumerian kings list some of their ancient Sumerian kings, for some of them ruling for 1,000 years at a time, which is very interesting. And a lot of the Sumerian mythology revolving around the Anunnaki, it's very hard to get good translations off cuneiform tablets. I can't read cuneiform. It's very difficult, so I have to go by other people who have translated it. And then, obviously, going in with all the occult symbolism.
Thank you for that overview. This topic is so complex, and I really appreciate that. You've done a lot of research into Sumeria and the reptilian hybrids. Please tell listeners more about this era and your ideas about how it's a turning point with humans integrating genetically with non-humans.
Okay, so the Alpha Draconians take over Sumeria. You have 12 of the Ajiji gods, Marduk, Enlil, Enki, Ishtar, Ninurta, there's a few others. Mamu Tiamat, who is known as the Dragon Queen, who rules over all of them. And then you have 300 Anunnaki. Now, as far as I know, an Alpha Draconian is avian-like. It has no sexual kind of compatibility with humans. It can't breed with humans. They're androgynous. They're neither male nor female. How they reproduce, we actually don't know. They're very envious of the male and female union of humans. It's one of the things that they don't like about our species, from what I understand, and this is why they despise like women so much, and they've attacked them throughout history. We have ancient mythology like Pandora's box, women unleashing evil in the world. I don't think that they've actually hybridized themselves with humans in that way, but they have allowed humans to become demonically influenced under their magic system, ceremonial pagan ritual magic that was done in temples, blood magic sacrifices. That's kind of how they control, and it's what they feed off of. They're energy parasites. So they feed off negative emotion. This is why they don't like people in love, because they vibrate at a higher frequency. And when you're a negative energy parasite, This is why, even to this day, I think they cause so much chaos on the world. At the same time, in, as you said, ancient Lemuria, coexisting with the dinosaurs, Atlanteans supposedly lived on 10 islands, according to thought, that were off the main coast of Atlantis. He called them islands. They sound like artificial islands. They were actually maybe made or they lived on. So, but on Lemuria, which is currently the Pacific Ocean now, the South Pacific to be specific, parts of ancient Lemuria are believed to be like New Zealand, Australia, all throughout the South Pacific. There's lots of islands there with creatures like Madagascar, creatures that don't exist anywhere else on Earth, like marsupials in Australia. Definitely a lot of reptiles exist in these areas. And this is supposedly where Lemuria was. And the evidence of Maldek being destroyed is supposedly the Mariana Trench in the Pacific Ocean, that big scar in the Earth. This is when the native Terran reptilians, they kind of go underground, according to her, and start living in underground cave systems. There's a Sumerian tablet that talks about this. Where Marduk had to wait a certain amount of time before founding Babylon, after Tiamat destroys the dragon. That's what they call it in the mythology. It's a story about Maldek being destroyed. They call planet Venus, they're referring to that as Tiamat, the destroyer. That's what they called the planet. I had mentioned before we went on and started the show that the BBC had made a documentary about theoretical Sauron reptilians. What if a reptilian race evolved alongside dinosaurs? What would they look like? And the BBC actually made a documentary about this years ago about Saurons. And that's pretty much kind of how they look like. They have like kind of serpentine skin. Yeah, these are supposedly a race of serpentine hominoids that evolved alongside dinosaurs. I had this pulled up. Now, I'm not going to... Some of the Latin names for what this species is a little confusing, but they supposedly start existing in the Middle Triassic period, which is 244 million years ago. And this is... We have one lizard on Earth right now that is supposedly related to these supposed Terran reptilians, and that's the Tuatara lizard that is found on New Zealand. It's warm-blooded, which is very interesting, because according to Lacerda, the native Terran reptilians made some evolutionary things that we associate as being mammalian. I'll explain those in a second. This Tuatara lizard found on New Zealand has an active third eye. The native Terran reptilians are said to possess powers of the third eye. They can disguise themselves. They use a cloaking where they can make humans believe they're looking at a human. But if you were to film them, they would appear reptilian on camera. I had mentioned to you there are temples in Japan that actually have statues of them. So they were at one time in communication or had some type of communication with native Japanese, which I find very interesting because they supposedly don't like Alpha Draconians. And we know that Japan never got along with ancient China. China, on the other hand, its emperors were descended from the bloodlines of dragons. Now, dragon is the Alpha Draconian Empire, the Alpha Draconian reptilians. I find it bizarre that we have temples in Japan of native Terran reptilians, and then in China, we have the dragon emperors, who supposedly don't like the Japanese people at all. And I always wondered if there's kind of some ancient rift going on there that we're not really being told about there. The Japanese emperors declared themselves that they were evolved from the bloodlines of emperors. Now, when they say bloodlines, what I think they're saying, I believe what they're doing is actually maybe not exactly making hybrids out of themselves with humans, but finding human forms that they want to take, royal bloodlines that they can inhabit the body of and use as their human host. That, I believe, is what they're doing. It makes more sense. These entities are usually going to want to appear as people with massive amounts of influence over large numbers of people, whether it's religion, politics, any type of social engineering. So, yeah, no peasants are getting close to an emperor. So they're not going to have too many actual interactions with humans. And this is the same way that nobility and kings, royalty is associated with Alpha Draconians also. This is the royal bloodlines. So these can all be traced back to Sumeria too. Yeah, and that's what I believe that their bloodlines really are. Maybe they're more conducive human hosts for them. Now the Ubaid lizard statues. The Lacerda Files were supposedly an interview that I read. I hired a voice actress to read these with me. They're on my YouTube channel. And these was supposedly an interview done with a female native Terran reptilian. When you read the interview, you realize this was not written by a human. It was written way before ChatGTP was out, so it's not AI, I can tell you that. The class of serpents that we believe that these Saurons or native Terrans evolved from are called Rhinocephalians. That's what the Tuatara lizard is. Now, Rhinocephalian literally means beakhead. That's what it means. So the faces of the native Terrans, from what we understand, their face and their, it kind of looks more like a frog. The males supposedly have three ridges on their heads. The females don't. Now, according to Lacerda, they do not have tails because once a creature goes bipedal, it doesn't need a tail anymore and it loses its tail. And according to Lacerda, they do lay eggs. They do sexually reproduce, the male and female native Terran reptilians. They're not cold-blooded like modern lizards, so they don't need to regulate their body temperature by laying out in the sun like some reptiles do. And she said that these were evolutionary traits because of the type of creatures they were evolving alongside. They've also developed the ability to breastfeed their young. And this was very interesting because the Ubaid lizard statue, one of them is a female breastfeeding her young. And when you see the statue, you're like, I thought only mammalians did that. And according to her, it's not. Because once they started learning to use tools, when they got opposable thumbs, and started getting more intelligence, this is how hominoid creatures, whether any type of creature, humans. A few things to point here. The hominoid form in itself is probably a universal form throughout the cosmos as the most conducive way to be a bipedal life form. You need 2 feet to walk on and opposable thumbs and fingers to use tools, which makes sense. Having the evolution of nursing your young allows you to pass on more of your knowledge to your children, hence creates a higher intelligence life form, like we do with humans. Look how long it takes for humans to get out of childhood and all the way up of age, you know, so it's not something that happens overnight. Some creatures, they just lay hundreds or even millions of eggs, and the strongest ones survive. And then apparently with the native Terran reptilians, they evolved to a form where they were literally forming family units and raising their young, and which I found very interesting. And that allowed them to evolve, and it allowed them, you know, to hunt, make tools. So some of these evolutionary traits, according to Lacerda, happened in their species. It was typically, you think of breastfeeding and feeding your young with the milk is typically a mammalian thing, but apparently it's not. So this is what I mean about them being not full lizards or related to the same lizard bloodlines as like modern lizards like the Komodo dragons or iguanas or anything like that. They're related to these older serpentine species known as, like I said, the Rhinocephalians, which translates out to beak-head lizards. And we do have one living specimen on New Zealand known as the Tuatara. And that Tuatara lizard can live to be 100 years old. It has an active third eye. Why does a lizard have an active third eye? That would give it advantage in nature, literally having an eye in the back of your head, pun intended. Supposedly in ancient times, a lot of creatures had evolved pineal glands or third eyes. We have them, but they're undeveloped. We do have a third eye. Humans do. You can develop it. It's not just the native Terran reptilians. There's also, I cover a lot of cryptozoology, and even like Sasquatch is said to have these third eye abilities, the native Terran reptilians. The Alpha Draconians are ruled by black magic in the occult, so they're very in tune. And what I find interesting about the Alpha Draconians being bird and avian-like is birds are very in tune to electromagnetic frequencies. That's how they fly all around the planet from north to south, and they don't need maps to fly around to know where they're going. They follow electromagnetics and the Earth's magnetic fields, and this is where you get into like ritual magic and ley lines and all that stuff. So they're very in tune to electromagnetic frequencies, which basically rules the occult. So what I understand about the Terrans and their kind of evolutionary path, and then they kind of fled to the underground. They want nothing to do with humans, and they want nothing to do with the Draconians either. So you have these two species that we know of on the planet, one living kind of underground, and then the Alpha Draconians. They are the forces behind black magic. This is kind of how they took over. All the ancient civilizations going on, Rome was very pagan, ancient Greece, Sumeria, Egypt. Yeah, Egypt is very well known for mysticism and occultism. So it's not a coincidence that all these ancient societies learned all this ritual pagan magic. Somebody taught it to them. Someone, you don't wake up one day and say, okay, we're going to build a temple to Zeus and start sacrificing animals and humans in it to work for the gods. Yeah, they were taught this stuff.
Ken, and again, thank you for going into detail about the native Terrans in the context of Lacertophiles. If you would, please remind listeners of the origins of the Lacertophiles.
The Lacertophiles was a interview that came up online. The exact time, it might have been around the late 90s, early 2000s, early time of the internet here. And it was supposedly a guy who in a location somewhere, I believe it was up in Norway or one of the entrances that the Terrans have to get to the surface, that held an interview with a female reptilian. She called herself Lacerda because she said to human, we wouldn't be able to pronounce her real name. She appeared to this guy as a human, but assured him that she was reptilian, you know, but she was just using a human form to not scare him. And she explained the history because according to her, they wanted to have their own story put out there to what they were, and that they were not the dragons in mythology that people were referencing. They were not the Naga. They were not the dragons. They were not the forces behind the occult, that they were actually on this planet in the times of Atlantis, and that they were also victims of the destruction of it. They evolved, like I said, alongside the dinosaurs living on the continent of Lemuria. The ones that did survive, they did flee to the underground. They kind of had minimalistic encounters with humans. However, there's like some very interesting things. Like when you read different, like specifically Greek mythology that goes back older, there is talks of serpent entities being around. Now, in Rome, they called anything that was like anything they didn't know what it was, they just referred to it as one a monstrous race. So that can include everything from giants to satyrs to merfolk, anything. So the Romans were a little more like, it's hard to get good mythology nailed down to them. They just referred to them as monstrous races. And anyone that didn't speak Roman was just called a barbarian. That's where the word comes from. But the Greeks describe it a little bit. There's some reptilian symbolism in Greek mythology, obviously, with Typhon and stuff like that. But as far as I know, she wanted to clear everything up, saying, explaining, like, no, we're not making reptilian-human hybrids here on the surface. We're not doing that. We're not even compatible to mate with humans. We're not abducting humans. We're not eating your kids. We're not ever any of the other things. And this is according to Lacerda, why she wanted to put this interview out there. And when you read the interview, you start realizing someone of a very high non-human intelligence wrote this. She answers questions about the paranormal, what rules the paranormal realms, how UFOs actually fly, how they're utilizing the Earth's magnetic fields, how some UFOs are actually native Terran reptilian UFOs, from and they have developed craft to fly among the surface. She also explained that they do come to the surface from time to time, and because they can make themselves appear human, they use something called visual mimicry, where they can make themselves look like a human, but it's tricking you, but if you were to film them on camera, they would appear reptilian, because they're not actually shape-shifting. It's a skill that they develop with the third eye. It's kind of like, it sounds like an evolutionary kind of defense mechanism. You got to think, if you're evolving alongside dinosaurs, and if you had a way to cloak yourself, that would be a big evolutionary advantage for an intelligence, if you could cloak yourself. Other entities out there from ancient times are said to be able to cloak themselves, including Sasquatch. It's a cloaking ability of sorts. Now, the Alpha Draconians, how their shape-shifting works is, it's a little more complex, because they actually reside in the fourth dimension, but can break through into the third dimension. They could do this with occult ritual, opening up interdimensional portals. But in order to stay in our dimension for an amount of time, they need to have a human form. Again, where the shape-shifting comes in for them. Assuming a human form that they could be in our dimension in. But that human form, yeah, is being controlled by an Alpha Draconian. Sometimes the Matrix does break down with that. I have a few shapeshifter videos on my YouTube channel that are of Draconians. And yeah, they do look like avian Skeksis, like birds, when they shapeshift. I have the Yusef Estes one on my... It's the trailer to my YouTube channel. So if you find my YouTube channel, it's the first video you'll see on there.
Thank you, Kenenigan. Our guest is Kenenigan 2.0, a returning guest to talk about the ancient history and legacy of reptilians. I didn't know this about the Lacerda Files, that she was acting as an ambassador, almost, for her species to differentiate between theirs and the more parasitic reptilians amid humans. The 2005 film Constantine discusses the half-breed reptilian demon that can't physically affect humans but can persuade them. If the half-breed, half-human, half-demon injures or kills the human, Constantine is cleared to deport them to hell. In the film, when the human flesh is melted away on the half-breed, the green reptilian scales appear. A similar element exists in Stephen King's It. When the clown's makeup is removed, a green, scaly, clawed reptilian creature is revealed. I include the clown because of the Paul Stobbs book, The Nephilim Look Like Clowns and the Origins of the Clown. Both the half-breed and the clown reptilians in Constantine and It are spiritually dark reptilian creatures. Please talk about what you've learned about the association of reptilian-type creatures and damnation to the underworld.
Well, yeah, there's always a serpent aspect of the underworld. And, you know, I think demons, a lot of people think of them being reptilian-like. In the movie Rosemary's Baby, she's impregnated by a reptilian in that scene. And she does have a reptilian baby at the end, but they don't show it. They didn't want to show it. I guess it was too much for back then in a movie. But that was one of the most infamous endings in a movie, Rosemary's Baby. You never actually see the baby. You see the old creepy people chanting, "Hail Satan, the Antichrist is here." And yeah, the Antichrist is reptilian, obviously, in that movie. That's what we believe the Antichrist will be an Alpha Draconian, probably reptilian. That's probably because the reptilians have had, the Alpha Draconians specifically, have had very big hand in... Well, religion, because they're the ones who brought the Pharisees from Babylon. That's what I believe the Pharisees are, the ones that were there at the crucifixion of Christ. The Pharisees, the ones who brought the teachings of Babylon from Sumeria. Not very good people or entities. So it started kind of there. This is why they see certain things as a threat to theirs and why they subvert certain things like politics and religion in a reptilian form to manipulate and subvert people, because they need to feed off negative energy. It's called loose feeding. Like in Buddhism, you have positive energy known as prana. That would be like positive energy that's generated by love frequencies and people are in love, they vibrate at higher frequencies, or enlightened, like Buddhist monks. And then but they try to keep people in a negative frequency because they actually feed off this. So things like wars, social engineering, divide and conquer tactics that have been used throughout history. It's kind of like what they've been doing. And then when the world gets too big for them to control anymore, then we start hearing about them wanting a new world order, and that's always a depopulation event, like the flood or something like that, where it seems like they can't control civilization anymore. I guess humans get too smart for them, start developing other skills we have as humans, like becoming enlightened or using our third eyes. I know that Stephen King, Pennywise is based off an Eldritch god. I know it's a Lovecraftian Eldritch god. I forget the actual one it's based off of. However, but it's interesting because H.P. Lovecraft actually wrote about reptilians. There's a story he wrote called The City of a Thousand Pillars, which involves an underground reptilian city. That was written by H.P. Lovecraft, and we get a lot of occultic things from H.P. Lovecraft. The most infamous one is the story of Cthulhu, and you get a lot of these Eldritch gods with them. And I haven't seen the new reboots of It or Pennywise. I know that there is, a new show out now. I don't know about the Nephilim looking like clowns. I have a different theory on what the Nephilim actually may be. I believe them to be the kind of cannibalistic giants that we hear about. Not Sasquatch, the red-haired giants that we hear about. There was recently one found in, I don't know if you've heard the story of the giant found in Afghanistan, in Kandahar.
Yeah, I've heard of it, but
that's what I think the Nephilim may be. I'm born Catholic, I am Catholic, but I try to disassociate what I was taught as a Catholic with what I'm learning about with the occult and a lot of these darker subjects, and I just try to look for the facts and what lines up in things, regardless of wherever the truth takes me. So that's kind of how I'm able to absorb all this in and try to make sense of things. But it always does go back to, like you said, the underworld. Yes, I do believe that the Anunnaki are the fallen angels that we hear about in Christianity, because I do believe the Antichrist will be a reptilian, an Alpha Draconian. I believe what it is probably a metaphor for the Draconians as a species falling out of grace. Maybe they were created. They were not always evil like they are. They were not always energy parasites doing what they do. However, they kind of evolved into that. That could be a metaphor for that. And what are angels? They're associated with wings. They're avian. Angels are even associated as having wings, just like eagles and dragons do. Though, like I said, the best representation you could look at online would be the Skeksis from the Dark Crystal movie that Jim Henson made. It's probably the closest depiction to an Alpha Draconian. And in that movie, you'll also see there's 12 of them that rule over the whole entire planet of Thrall. There's not a lot of them. But they rule over the planet by doing bioengineering and black magic. They do rituals right in the movie. And this is kind of how they rule over the planet in the Dark Crystal movie. A lot of these things that you're bringing up, we refer to it as mystosynchronism in movies, hidden symbols and themes in movies that are meant to be embedded into your subconscious. So this is why I think after a lot of people associate demons in the underworld with reptilian entities. And like I said, in Rosemary's Baby, she was impregnated by a reptilian. And the Antichrist she birthed at the end of the movie is a reptilian. So I don't think that was a coincidence.
In a very early inception of this radio show, once called The Pale Horse, I read something called The Reptilian Pact back in 2007. I read the whole thing during the show, and it made some listeners upset. It was too much at the time, maybe too dark and depressing. And I remember the site I found it on. It had a GIF file of a bipedal reptilian lumbering in the margin. And the site was built in 1997, nearly 30 years ago. Let me read a few lines here. An illusion it will be, so large, so vast, it will escape their perception. those who will see it will be thought of as insane. We will create separate fronts to prevent them from seeing the connection between us. We will behave as if we are not connected to keep the illusion alive. Our goal will be accomplished one drop at a time, so as to never bring suspicion upon ourselves. This will also prevent them from seeing the changes as they occur. We will always stand above the relative field of their experience, for we know the secrets of the Absolute. We will work together always and will remain bound by blood and secrecy. Death will come to he who speaks. Death will come to he who speaks. We will keep their lifespan short and their minds weak while pretending to do the opposite. We will use our knowledge of science and technology in subtle ways so they will never see what is happening. We will use soft metals, aging accelerators, and sedatives in food and water, also in the air. They will be blanketed by poisons everywhere they turn. The soft metals will cause them to lose their minds. We will promise to find a cure from our many fronts, yet we will feed them more poison. The poisons will be absorbed through their skin and mouth. They will destroy their minds and reproductive systems. From all this, their children will be born dead, and we will conceal this information. The poisons will be hidden in everything that surrounds them, in what they drink, eat, breathe, and wear. That's an excerpt from the Reptilian Pact. It's hard not to notice the relevancy in this post-engineered pandemic era. A lot of fence-sitters and newly aware people became emboldened against the subtle and active chemical and biological attacks. There isn't a need to continually give example after example supporting this pact. I'm not saying it's exclusively reptilian, however, the accuracy is quite something. This is diving right into the deep end, and I suspect if society continues to pretend with business as usual, it will keep getting worse. Please talk about the non-humans among us and the parasitic adversary behind events such as the engineered pandemic.
Yeah, well, okay, when you're reading the pact there, that sounds kind of like a oath that you take into secret societies, but specifically the blood and secrecy part. That's a blood oath you take, and you're supposed to keep it secret. You learn how to become a magician, invoking demons in a cult ritual and summoning reptilians. Now, the other things you're talking about, the heavy metals, the poisoning of the food supply and all that, that sounds like kind of that's the depopulation agenda 21 kind of mixed into that, which is a depopulation agenda. But hence their new world order. When humans, the planet gets too big for them to control anymore, which we see them is happening today. Yeah, we did have a pandemic recently. But what else is interesting, that's also prophesied in the Bible. It says in Armageddon, when the Antichrist comes, all nations will be deceived by their pharmakeia. Pharmakeia is the Greek word for medicine and black magic or witchcraft, which is very interesting. You can look at pharmaceuticals as being modern alchemy. It sounds like the depopulation agendas kind of mixed in there. And the people that would carry out those agendas would be people that are in service to Babylon. I refer to them as thralls because they're not slaves. Slaves, these people get very wealthy serving elites. They get very wealthy carrying out certain agendas. So we have seen a ramping up, yeah, processed food, heavy metals, chemtrails, poisoning of the earth with all the mining they're doing, like for lithium, and they're kind of destroying the planet and make it uninhabitable for humans. At the end of the day, I believe it all comes down again to a depopulation agenda. I think that's probably what they're referring to as maybe a reptilian pact, probably taking an oath to be in service to the New World Order. People refer to it as Zionism. I think that word can get misunderstood very easily. The New World Order would be, in my belief, is reptilians being able to rule like they did in the Aztec times in ancient Babylon, at being worshipped in their temples, probably in their reptilian forms with humans bringing them blood sacrifice. A resurgence of paganism on planet Earth, which was what paganism was. However, with the other religions going on the planet, they're having a problem with that because they can't get people to openly convert to... And Babylon was even worse than paganism. You've heard the story of Sodom and Gomorrah from the Bible. That's where that comes from. They were more profane than most pagans were in Babylon. The humans were pretty much treated as slaves. There you have the 300 slave laws from Hammurabi that were written in Sumeria. That's what their New World Order is. That's what a bigger agenda that they've been trying to carry out. And George Bush Sr. himself in 1991 was the one that called for the New World Order to be formed. And then, you know, you said you saw that on a website in 1997. So I don't find that surprising. That's kind of when they ramped up the depopulation agendas. We had the first Iraq war happened after he announced that, which was Babylon, ancient Babylon. I find it interesting that kicking off the New World Order started with invading Saddam Hussein in Iraq in 1991 or 93, I think. And that started the first war over there. It kind of hasn't stopped since then. They already tried to predict the three world wars. They do want to have a third world war to help. And their goal is to, usher in the Antichrist, which would symbolize their reptilian New World Order, where they wouldn't have to hide anymore. They would be worshipped as gods again. And that's what I think they're kind of hinting at. So, they need to, attempting to depopulate Earth and start over again. And this is why people like me try to educate people on what's going on, so we can kind of stop this. I think they've done it a few times throughout history. They were responsible for the destruction of humans a few times, I believe. Most infamous one being the flood. We know that they engineer events today for mass casualty events all the time. It's not unheard of. Wars are mass casualty events for everyone. Their logo definitely is Order Ab Kayo, Order Through Chaos. The language they use, if you notice, all legal and medical terms are written in Latin. So are all occultic terms. It's very interesting. It's like Latin is the language of the New World Order, the one they use most often. I don't think anyone ever questions that. Why are modern humans, why are all of our medical and legal terms and scientific terms in Latin when nobody speaks Latin anymore? Going back to the Roman eagle, the eagle, the symbol of the Alpha Draconians. So they're trying to revert Earth back to this kind of pagan utopia for them. They're having a harder and harder time having that happen with the rise of religions and spiritual movements on planet Earth. So they're always trying to break those up.
Yeah, you're right. It will be interesting to see how they try to pull this off. For the time being, the different ruling factions are getting along with their common goals, but like most gangster films, they end up killing each other at the end of the story.
Yeah, it's the iconic, like, coming to movies, you know, what happens is someone does something for a bad guy, he owes him a bunch of money, and they say it's easier just to kill him and not pay him. Yeah, that's often a trope used in a lot of movies. You know, don't make deals with the devil. It kind of comes to mind.
Given what you've researched through the years on the topic of They Walk Among Us, these are the leadership mimicking human form. What are your thoughts about the current UFO alien disclosure movement? How could it be possible when the non-humans are in positions of power masquerading as humans?
They view themselves as living gods and want to be worshipped as gods. That's kind of what the how they operate, why they want to invoke the Antichrist as the antithesis towards Jesus, obviously. So they want to be worshipped as gods like they were, but they can't do it because there's too many humans that wouldn't accept them for what they are on Earth. I think that's one of the biggest problems they have. You don't get very many humans that'll even go along with what the elites are involved in. A lot of the ritualistic stuff, Bohemian Grove, Epstein Island, all the other places where the elite go play and do occultic things. Most people don't even endorse that. So that's kind of another trouble they're having. And like you said, I think there are factions warring with each other over different things. I ultimately believe that they're failing at getting their New World Order, kind of Babylonian utopia. and I don't think they're getting it as planned. And I don't know what's in the future, but hopefully, I think humans are getting sick of a lot of the manipulation. It's why people find people like me on YouTube to learn about the reptilians. They feel something's going on that's not human, having influence on Earth. But as far as the employee, I don't see like invasion happening with them.
Or disclosure.
Yeah, they're not going to. Their symbolism is right in plain sight if you know how to read it. Like I said, the symbol of the Alpha Draconian Empire is the eagle. Nobody questions why the Romans, the Americans, and the Nazis all use the same eagle as their logo. These are three entities that shouldn't have anything to want to do with anyone. One was like a fascist imperial regime, the Romans. Then you have the United States of America, and then you have the Nazis, and they're all using the same eagle logo. You know, and why are all countries using avian bird symbols as their logos when we are mammalians, such as the double-headed phoenix in Russia? Other avian symbols in Saudi Arabia, they use the falcon as their symbol, but they're all bird symbols. Dragons are mythical flying creatures, of course, but dragons refer to the Draco star system, the actual Alpha Draconian star system where they originally come from. That's a place in the cosmos. When you say dragon, that's actually what it's a reference to. And they're obviously not flying dragons, but it's just a reference they use as a symbol for their bloodline. Like I said, the Chinese emperors claim to be descended from the blood of dragons in ancient times. Supposedly people that are descended from the bloodlines of dragons, they were mythically able to shapeshift, yes, just like the Alpha Draconians do.
We might end up seeing a type of disclosure that Arthur C. Clarke describes in A Childhood's End.
Oh, that's a very good story. Yeah, because I actually had the TV show downloaded on my computer. I haven't watched it yet because they did a recent remake of it. I'm familiar with the story, though. Yeah, I know that Charles Dance plays the voice of the entity. I know what he looks like. I know what the reveal is about that. So, I know the story of Childhood, and of course I do.
I noticed in these creation stories there's a repeating notion of the best is brought out in humans when facing adversity, and so arrangements are made to put humans to the test, such as creating a melting pot of different races, programmed to be dominant and have it play out. It's not an ideal situation in the process of activating and realizing our own evolution, but it could be argued on a very basic level, the varied origins of human DNA require an agitation, threats on life, insecurity, and be pushed to another level of evolution. And, you know, you wonder, is that shadow aspect so wired up inside of us, preventing humans to focus on learning to harmonize with each other and our environment and achieve the same progress?
Well, it's kind of, this is where the metaphorical story of the Tower of Babel comes into play in Babylon, where they confuse the languages so humans couldn't communicate, so they can control them easier. Because when people can't communicate, it's easier to get them to be at each other's throats and fighting with each other. So they use these same kind of constructs in modern times to divide people, whether it's race, religion, sex, politics, different angles, to keep people divided. The easiest answer is the reason why we're all different colors is because of the melanin in our skin. And if you evolve closer to the equator, you have a natural immunity against the sun. That's all that is. It's nothing, you know, so we know that. And then as the world mixes together, they're still trying to push the race politics, although it shouldn't exist in the United States now. We've been trying to live together in harmony. I live in a big city. I think so. I see a lot of diversity every day, but they do still try to push those agendas, and it's a way to keep people divided and ununiting, because that's what I believe their biggest fear is the Illuminati, is all humans actually getting along and not fighting anymore, and starting to evolve as a species, talk things out, and not go to war and calling each other names all the time. because that's not going to get us very far.
What a nightmare for them, right?
Yes, yes. I know it sounds a little hippie, but it's the truth, and it's what I found out about studying these entities. It
no
sounds a little...
more louche food for them, and they don't like that.
And humans, I don't think, like it either. No one really likes fighting all the time. And they might say they do, but they don't. And the ones that cause all the chaos are not the ones who actually have to live with the consequences.
It's really great to have you back on the show. You've been unearthing gems of knowledge for your subscribers on these topics. And I know you're working on projects. Would you tell listeners about that and how to stay in touch with your research?
Sure. My YouTube channel is actually Kinnegan, the Book of Reptilians on YouTube. You can find me there. I don't have a way to kind of promote it because I don't even have a name for it yet. But starting in January, I am starting a podcast where once a week I will be releasing episodes on all the major podcasting platforms, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple, and all that, where I'm going to basically dictate all of my reptilian research into a podcast radio format, probably like 2-hour long shows once a week that'll be uploaded starting in January. And I am still currently working on a book about reptilians, publishing my research about Alpha Draconians and Native Terran reptilians. And hopefully that gets published this year also, which is kind of why I'm starting the podcast in January also.
Do you have a working title?
The Book of Reptilians. That's what I actually... that was a working title because I sometimes the simplest titles just work. I didn't want anything... I don't know what the podcast is going to be called yet. I'm not sure about that yet. I'm still in the process of setting all that up, but hopefully that's launching around mid-January.
Very good. Very good. That sounds great. Okay, so I'll be looking out for that and the book and have you back on to talk about the book. And thank you so much for being on In Other News.
Hey, thank you, Jeff.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the